if they can count 424 billion for war, why can't they count our votes? And if they can count thousands of bombs and still be buying more, why can't they count our votes? We're not done.
Welcome to the People Speak Radio. This is your host, David Swanson. I'll be with you for the next hour, and we will have three guests this show. We are quite privileged this evening. Joining us in the second half of the program will be retired U.S. Army Colonel Ann Wright, who retired and resigned from service in the U.S. State Department, where she had been for decades, on the day we invaded Iraq and in protest. And she has a terrific new book that we'll be talking about that's about her story and the story of many others who've resigned and blown whistles and spoken out against this war at some risk to themselves in this country and others. And with us for the full program, including the first half of the show, are the pair of award-winning activist musicians who make up the group that we were just listening to, that's known to many of us from peace and justice events around the country in recent years, Emma's Revolution. And their names are Pat Humphreys and Sandy O. Pat and Sandy, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
Hey, David, great to be here.
It's wonderful. What does O stand for, oh my God, we need a revolution, or what's this?
Absolutely, you know. Well, you know, J-Lo gave up hers, so I figured it was about time that we got to take it on.
I see. And where are you guys from? How'd you get together? How long has Emma's Revolution been out there jamming?
Well, Sandy and I have actually known one another and been singing together for about 15 years. It was on and off for the first 8 years, but the last 7 years we've been doing this full-time together. I sang as a soloist for many years before that, and Sandy did other musical things before that, independent of me. But just as our first CD was about to be released, in, what was that, 2004, our One Times a Million Equals Change CD, we decided to go with the name Emma's Revolution, of course, in the spirit of Emma Goldman.
Who said no revolutions without dancing?
Well, you know, there's no really clear evidence that she necessarily uttered those words. It's possible that it was someone paraphrasing her. That what she did say when she was chastised by a young colleague for dancing at a party was that everyone has the right to free expression and to beautiful, radiant things. And in essence, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
Well, I second that. Revolutions should be fun.
We know that we have to have some fun while we're dealing with all this stuff. That song that you played at the start of the show here, I wrote it the night before we were going to a demonstration in New York City. This was the first Bush election, and there was still a chance that Congress was going to take some action to say, you know, there really does seem to be something fishy about those electronic voting machines, and maybe we better do a recount. And there were all these people standing outside. Well, there were going to be all these people standing outside on a December day in New York City, pretty cold, right? And we are often in that position of performing at demonstrations or, you know, just moments when people decide they've had enough. And you often need to kind of feed people's spirit and kind of spark their creativity and sometimes just appeal to humor to get them through kind of the continual onslaught of things that have gone on. So I wrote that song years ago, and we've been singing it for years. And as you could tell from that snippet that you played, we used to have to shout out names like Karl Rove and Donald Rumsfeld. But the song and all of the activism that we've all been doing was actually successful in getting those people out of office. Karl Rove may be on TV, but he's not exactly where he used to be anymore. And we've had a good time singing that song all across the country, including near Crawford, Texas, when we met you down there in Texas at the Camp Casey Peace Awards a couple of years ago.
You know, we take credit for things like that. It was tongue-in-cheek, of course, but it is, you know, partly due to the pressure that those of us who've continued to go down to the White House or go into congressional offices and you know, make our views known. It is that kind of pressure that makes it unbearable, I think, for some of these guys to stay in those positions. It doesn't mean that they don't shift into lobbyist positions or, you know, like Karl Rove, he's clearly pulling the strings, you know, now for McCain's campaign. But, you know, I think it keeps them from just, you know, moving completely, completely unchecked and trampling all over all of us.
Well, it's you know, I love that song, and I can't help singing it and tapping my feet and clapping my hands. And I think it's still great to hear it with names like Donald Rumsfeld and Karl Rove, because it's encouraging that, you know, it, in some measure, we got rid of them. And
yeah,
at the same time, I don't think the job is done. Michael Ratner has a book out this week called The Trial of Donald Rumsfeld that's, you know, an indictment of Donald Rumsfeld, the prosecution that's needed against him. Karl Rove has the Congress this week debating whether to hold him in contempt for simply refusing to comply with a subpoena. Now, they won't hold him in inherent contempt, which means go out and arrest him and imprison him on Capitol Hill until he answers their questions, but they will take this symbolic gesture of holding him in contempt and sending it through an endless court process again. And I think the more we can push them to something stronger, the better.
Absolutely. I mean, we all hold Karl Rove in contempt. Think of all the careers that were destroyed during the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings, and, you know, people that were charged with contempt and their careers were ruined. You know, I think that it's time for Karl Rove to move into a different kind of business, you know, selling cars, anything.
How about making license plates?
Great, better.
let's tell people how they can get in on this conversation. This is David Swanson at the PeopleSpeakRadio.net, and we are speaking with Pat Humphreys and Sandy O, who together form Emma's Revolution. We heard a clip of their music at the opening, and we'll hear some more throughout the hour. But you can join us by going to thepeoplespeakradio.net, thepeoplespeakradio.net, and going to the chat room and sending in your questions. Or you can call in with your questions. Internationally, call 877-489-6350. That's toll-free, 877-489-6350. In the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494, which is toll-free, 888-228-4494. Anything on your mind you want to ask of Emma's Revolution, including when the revolution starts and where it will be televised, call in and ask us. That song is incredibly appropriate at the moment, as you know, because it's looking very likely that they won't count our votes. Our election, have you worked with election protection groups? Do they like that song? What are you involved in and aware of in terms of getting our votes counted this time?
Well, I actually had a personal experience last year, I suppose it was, I think, of almost having my vote not counted, and I'd voted in the same exact elementary school for the past 7 years. And there was a woman there who was from a local group that's, you know, for, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but she was very helpful in taking, you know, basically taking a deposition, I guess, on site for me of this, of the fact that suddenly they couldn't find my name on the voter rolls. And they eventually did find it, and I voted that same day. But to have it be that close, of course, was really shocking to me. And, of course, it's shocking to anybody who gets turned away. And, of course, we're really, really concerned about what's going on with the Republican Committee right now, deciding that they're going to go after the voting rights of folks in Michigan who've been displaced by mortgage foreclosures. So, and our connection with that song and with activist groups, we know a lot of activist groups enjoy it and play it and that kind of stuff, but I'm not sure that it's gotten up to something like Black Box Voting, which was a group that we found out about through the program called Hacking Democracy, that was just really an eye-opener, and we suggest anybody who hasn't seen that film to Google Hacking Democracy and get yourself a copy of the DVD. It will just shock you, but at the same time, it'll give you the kind of information so that you're prepared, like I was, when they couldn't find my name. I just kept saying, I've been voting here. I kept showing my ID, and I placed, you know, I sent letters to the voting authorities here in Maryland and that kind of thing. So our connection with groups that we work with, often we work much more closely with an organization than we did for that one specifically. Like we have an event coming up this week here in D.C., for an organization called Earth Rights International. And they're not working specifically on voting rights, but they're working on this fantastic alliance between human rights and environmental rights. And they were responsible for a landmark Supreme Court victory on behalf of 15 villagers in Burma. They won $30 million from Unocal Oil Corporation that's based here in the United States for atrocities that Unocal committed, or that was committed in Unocal's name, on the land in Burma. And what's wonderful about that victory is not only that these particular people were, you know, awarded some kind of monetary support for the injustices that they've gone through, and all of those people, I think almost all of them, 14 out of 15, decided to share their money with their entire villages. But what's also fantastic about that work that Earth Rights International did and that lawsuit that they won is that it opened the door. It cracked into that what was otherwise this stone wall of American corporations being completely able to run amok in other countries. So this lawsuit is now a crack in the door, and the next lawsuit that they're taking up is against Chevron for human rights abuses in Nigeria. And we're going to be part of an event on Tuesday night here in D.C. to hear from some of the legal team, both the folks from Earth Rights International and the folks from Nigeria, who are going to be part of a hearing on Capitol Hill on Tuesday afternoon, and then starting this second lawsuit.
In this case, we won't actually be performing. Often we perform for Earth Rights International events. This particular one is a more informal fundraising sort of event, but they're doing really exciting work, and again, Sandy wrote a song for them called Silent No Longer that's on our most recent CD, Roots, Rock, and Revolution.
So you're clearly activist musicians. It's hard to tell which comes first, the activism or the music, but I want to ask a little about the music. Do you both write the songs? Do you ever write them jointly? Do you both sing? How do you split up the roles?
All of the above. It all depends on the particular issue. You know, we write a lot of things very collaboratively, you know, one line and then the next, you know, from the next person. It just depends on the particular issue and the particular moment. In that case of Silent No Longer, we were on the road, and we were planning to play an event for these folks at Earth Rights International, and we happened to stop in at had been driving for many hours, and we pulled into a motel, and as soon as we walked into the lobby, it was Nightline. A Nightline report came on the television in the lobby of this motel somewhere in Vermont, and this story was on about our friends. We were like, oh, my gosh, excuse me, you know, the woman at the counter, you know. And we walked over to the television and said, can you just hold on for a minute? And we sat and watched this news report. You know, it was a fairly long, fairly extensive piece about Earth rights. And we, you know, we got to really take in some of the imagery. And, you know, we had heard them tell the stories, but it's so different to actually sit there and watch some of the footage and to see this film of Kasawa going back and forth the Thai-Burma border and collecting information and talking about his experience, documenting atrocities and then reporting them to human rights groups in Thailand. That, but I had been doing the driving that night, so I was exhausted and I fell asleep and Sandy stayed up and wrote the song.
So it's whoever's the least exhausted gets the songwriting duties.
Sometimes. And we've had, you know, really amazing experiences where we'll be at an event and just witness, you know, something going on or hear someone's firsthand testimony and then we'll be driving on to the next place and we'll write the song together in the car. So we have done, as Pat said, sort of all of the above. We both sing, we both play guitar, and we both write. And sometimes we're writing it together and sometimes one of us is writing it, and we bring it to the other one, and we kind of, you know, arrange it up together and perform it, of course, together.
You have some terrific quotes on your website, and one is from Pete Seeger, who I assume is would say the same thing about Sandy's songs, but says, Pat's songs will be sung well into the 22nd century. And you have a quote that maybe you could explain the background of from Alice Walker, who says, across from the White House we paused. We were arrested several hours later, having sung Peace, Salam, Shalom, and All We Are Saying the entire time.
Well, that was a total thrill for us to see that quote. And I think it's in the book that is about Code Pink. And I know that your folks who are listening here or maybe catching you on the online probably know about Code Pink. But they were one of the early, you know, groups we got involved with here in D.C., and there was a book that they put out, How to Stop the Next War Now. And that quote was in there. And we were just really thrilled, you know, that for one thing, of course, it's wonderful when, you know, that someone like Alice Walker is taking part in activism and on-the-street activism just like the rest of us grassroots activists are. We really appreciate when folks with that kind of clout use their clout in support of peace and justice. And then I loved, of course, how she kind of just said our song, Peace, Salam, Shalom, and All We Are Saying, which is, she was referencing to All We Are Saying is Give Peace a Chance, John Lennon's song. And what an honor for those two songs to be, you know, juxtaposed in her mind and just kind of put together at the same time. So what we know about that is it was actually a demonstration we weren't at, but there were folks who are listening may have seen coverage of it on the news because we also saw coverage of it. And we know of many, many folks who email us and say, yeah, you know, we just sang your song. I heard from a woman who said, we sang your song on a peace delegation in Morocco, and, you know, we've sung it. And other people write and say that they sang it at demonstrations all over the country and the world. And the funny thing for us, of course, is that often they don't know we wrote the song or they don't even know that anybody living wrote the song. People sometimes think songs come out of, I don't know, they come out of the ether. I loved seeing on your website that you say that your motto is, you know, the people speak radio, this land was made for you and me. And I'm quoting, of course, Woody Guthrie's song. And we love that because we know the power of music to really stick with people and give people that kind of extra inspiration, and ourselves too, of course. We write these songs because we need the inspiration and the comfort or just the fire to keep going kind of thing.
A lot of people appreciate you sharing it with them. I think I was there that day that Alice Walker is talking about in that quote.
Nice.
And I think
we were actually there earlier. We sang at a rally, but then it was one of those things where we had just blown into town, and we're on the road 200 days a year, so we stay out of the area more than in the area. So I remember, actually, that we came in, we sang at a rally, and we were exhausted. We just went back home. We didn't get a chance to actually sit in on the rest of the day, but we were thrilled to hear that report from that day.
Well, I think we're going to try to play a clip from Peace, Salam, Shalom, at the break. We have to take a break in the program in about 10 minutes. And by the way, the questions are piling up in the chat room, and I should start getting to them. But can you give us the background on that song, what it means and where it came from?
We were moving from New York City to the Washington, D.C. area over September 11th. And our first instinct, actually, we were in Maryland at the time. Our first instinct in response to what had just happened was, I guess it was, you know, mine at first, just to keep myself from being glued to the television and you know, watching those horrible images over and over again and dreading what the Bush administration was, how the Bush administration was likely to respond. My response to myself was to sing the words peace, Salam, Shalom, you know, peace in English, peace in Arabic, and peace in Hebrew in my head. Because we had just left New York City, and it was very difficult to have this all happen and have our friends and family be in the city, you know, some of whom worked in the trade center, and, you know, it was a terrifying time. And, you know, we found that our neighbors had sort of a distant relationship with the Pentagon, unless they obviously knew someone who was directly affected. But we were walking around like New Yorkers, and it was really, we really needed to hear those words for ourselves, and they became this sort of mantra for both of us. And we fairly quickly that week wrote them into the song, and then as soon as the bridges and tunnels opened back up to New York, we went up, and we sang the song on Democracy Now!, actually. Amy, if you remember, was having marathon sessions there at the firehouse where they just stayed on the air for as long as they possibly could, and musicians like us would come in and perform. So we just came in and sang that song on the radio. What we were finding is that people were at a loss for words during that time, and we really needed, you know, we saw all of the symbols, all of the flags, you know, already draped on overpasses and on this, you know, this eastern corridor, the words to the Star Spangled Banner were dropped, you know, on sheets from the overpasses and everything, and we actually made a shirt for the first peace rally that they were organizing in New York City in response to the visual response that people were displaying, because we just thought this is so quickly going to spiral into war, and none of us that felt sort of more directly affected by that want to see someone else killed in the name of this tragedy, and we've just been singing it ever since, and so have a lot of other folks. I think it's brought them the same kind of solace that it brought us, and energy to keep going and keep the focus.
It was the right response, and I wish the whole nation had it, in particular our so-called representatives in government, and it's not too late for us to have that response. Let me jump to some questions that are coming in for you in the chat room. We are speaking with Sandy O and Pat Humphreys, who together make up Emma's Revolution. Wonderful, wonderful music, and you can listen to some of it and find out more at emmasrevolution.com. Or you can ask your questions here through the chat room at thepeoplespeakradio.net or calling in toll-free to 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, or outside of the U.S. and Canada, 877-489-6350. Let's start with Susan in Maryland. You guys are in Maryland, I think. She asks, my question for both of you is, you get to interact with the public. Do you think the public understands your politics and activism, or are you constantly explaining yourselves?
We like to tell stories. So, you know, we talk a lot about the context of our songs and about the people that we meet around the different issues that we talk about, I mean, that we sing about. So, you know, we get in a lot of opportunity to just sort of present the picture and then follow up with the song to kind of punctuate the issue. So it's not like every single person we meet on the street necessarily gets our politics, but I think when you come to one of our concerts, you get a pretty clear sense of where we're coming from.
I think it's also, it's an and more than an or, and we are in Maryland, like Susan, but she was sort of, I think she posited, you know, do we talk to people who agree with us, or do we have to explain ourselves? And I think it's and. Yeah. So we talk to people who think like we do, sometimes on a number of issues, and sometimes not on a number of other issues that we touch on. The way we do our music and kind of the way we think is that we're not single-issue activists, because so many of these issues are interconnected. And, of course, they're all interconnected. We wouldn't have the environmental disasters that we're having now with, you know, global warming and increasing sea level and everything. If we didn't have oil, you know, oil wars that are just contributing to that, and, of course, we wouldn't have the kind of poverty and disproportionate distribution of wealth if we didn't have oil wars and people in power and people who aren't elected, and therefore it gets you right into voting rights. And so a lot of these things are very, very connected. So often we're talking with people who agree on some things and who want to hear some more information on another issue.
We also have people that come to us by way of one song or another. The Pete Seeger quote that you mentioned earlier came from an All Things Considered piece that NPR did. Marika Partridge, who was formerly with All Things Considered, did the piece, and it's a song called "Swimming to the Other Side," and it is a less sort of pointedly political song, and you know, more sort of inspirational song in general. And some folks will just come to our concerts because they heard that one song on the radio and fell in love with it. And they often find there's a great deal more to what we do than that song, of course. And, you know, so some people come very prepared and knowing a lot about the issues, and many people come without any background in the issues at all. And you know, our job is to give space for people to all sit in that room together and, you know, leave them, you know, let them leave singing and thinking about these things.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's so many sort of mainstream popular musicians who in general don't sing about peace or justice or activism, but will occasionally throw in a peace song or something at a concert, and a lot of people will cheer and others will look annoyed or not know what's going on. I've gone to concerts with Willie Nelson, whose crowd is, you know, completely white, completely Republican, pretty far to the right, and he'll get up and sing these songs about peace and justice and overthrowing tyrants, and they will not get it. They'll cheer along and have absolutely no idea what he's singing about, and he won't explain it to them because he doesn't want to lose the people who buy his records, right? And so I think I'm assuming with you guys, the crowds tend to be primarily people who know what you're singing about before they walk in the door, right?
Not necessarily, though. It's interesting to see what happens, you know. And we have the occasional person leave, you know, because they find something annoying or whatever, but most of the time we don't find that happening with, even with people that came, you know, because of some song that was not particularly geared toward any issue.
You know, we had a great experience at a festival. It was probably not this past summer, but a summer ago, before then. We were at this festival in New York State, and this guy came up to talk to Pat. He said, you know, I heard you here, I don't know, 10 years ago. You remember this? And he said, at the time, you sang this song about her song called People Love, which is basically saying that no matter who people are choosing to be in a relationship with, it's about love. So, you know, what's the problem with accepting love? And so here was this man saying, you know, when you sang that song 10 years ago, I just thought, why does she have to flaunt her being a lesbian? What's that about, you know? And then it ended up, a couple years after that, his own child came out. And he told us this 2 years ago, that what a help it was to have her song kind of just lingering in the back of his mind, and to have sort of had this experience, even though his first experience was kind of agitated about it and thinking, I just came for a concert. Why is she telling me about her being a lesbian and all that kind of stuff? So all these years later, it somehow stuck with him. He didn't agree with us then, but here he was thanking her these years later and saying that it just helped him open up a space in himself to accept his own child coming out.
It's comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, you know, sort of position. I think there's value in both.
I agree, and I think a speech couldn't have done that. I think it took music to do that. I mean, it's so wonderful to hear. It's great to hear people say things you agree with, but to hear them sing things you agree with is wonderful. We have to take a break in a second, and when we come back, we're going to have Ann Wright join us. But let me get at least one of these unavoidable expected questions out of the way here. Do you think Senator Obama will get us out of Iraq?
If we make him.
Good answer. I think.
I think it only if we make him, because his position is. His position has changed, obviously, fairly dramatic throughout this campaign, and I don't think we can count on anybody, Democrat or Green or, you know, any kind of independent anybody, to get us out of there without us really demanding that they do so.
Yeah, and out of Afghanistan and out of Pakistan.
Absolutely.
Wherever else.
Absolutely.
They want to redeploy us to. We have to take a break for a few minutes and hopefully play a clip of Peace, Salam, Shalom for those who haven't heard it. And if you can't after that get it out of your head, you can go hear it again at emmasrevolution.com. But we will be back in a few minutes. This is David Swanson with Pat Humphries and Sandy O of Emma's Revolution at thepeoplespeakradio.net. We will be joined in a few by Colonel Ann Wright, retired from the U.S. Army, and you can join us at thepeoplespeakradio.net chat room or at 888-228-4494. We will be back in just a few minutes.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. Economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Back at the People Speak Radio. This is your host, David Swanson. We are at thepeoplespeakradio.net, where you can send in your questions through the chat room, although they are piling up, so you might want to call in instead at 888-228-4494. We were just listening to a little bit of Peace, Salam, Shalom from Emma's Revolution, which consists of Sandy O and Pat Humphreys, who have been with us for the past half hour and are still with us, and we are joined by retired U.S. Army Colonel Ann Wright. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, David, and hi to Pat and Sandy.
Hey, Ann.
It is wonderful to have you here, Ann, and as I'm sure most of our listeners are aware, you spent many years in the military and in the employ of our State Department and quit the day we invaded Iraq and did so in protest. Tell us briefly, because I don't even know that much, your background in terms of all the wars you must have, you know, not resigned over. Did you change, or did the government change, or some of each?
Well, I think it was a little bit of all of it. I'd been in the U.S. government for during 8 different presidential administrations, starting with Lyndon Johnson, and joining the military during the time of another unpopular war, the Vietnam War. So many people could say, my gosh, if you were in the government since the mid-60s, there were plenty of very questionable policies of many, many of these administrations, and why didn't you resign on invasions of Grenada or Panama or Haiti, the Dominican Republic? Why did it take you so long? And I guess it's a function of, as a government bureaucrat, you can always find some part of government that you can work in that, and programs that you feel like, well, while there may be a major policy that's not good for America or for good for the world, there are other things you can work on that aren't harming anyone. And that's the way I kind of looked at it. I would find niches where I felt very comfortable that I was doing good for our country, and so I stayed in until finally this one of the invasion and occupation of an oil-rich Arab Muslim country that had not done anything to the United States, and without the authorization of the UN Security Council for the United States to attack Iraq, invade and occupy, to me was something that was just going to be so dangerous and disastrous for our country that I just could not be a part of that one.
Well, I think we all appreciate that you mm-hmm. did that. There may have been others you could have resigned over. Certainly there were, but it was very, very helpful to the peace movement for you to do this. And you've now put out a book called Voices. The website is voicesofconscience.com, voicesofconscience.com. But the book is called Dissent, Voices of Conscience, Government Insiders Speak Out Against the War in Iraq, which includes not just your story, but the story of many people who've been part of our government and governments of countries in the so-called coalition of the willing, who've taken some risks and some sacrifices and spoken out. In many cases, people who were involved in things they never should have been involved in, but who decided they would be no longer, and whose stories are in this wonderful book. Tell for people who haven't seen the book and don't know that there are these cases out there, give us an idea of what they'll learn.
Surely. Well, there, besides the three of us of the State Department that resigned in opposition to the war, we gave up our jobs, but we really didn't have penalties associated with our speaking out against the invasion and occupation of Iraq. There were other people in our government who, while staying in the government, tried to alert their agencies that there were questionable, if not illegal or criminal, things that were being done by their own agencies in either the events after 9/11 or with the invasion and occupation of Iraq. People in our FBI, in our Department of Justice, in the National Security Agency, in the CIA, in the Department of Defense. We had young men and women of our own military who were saying on the invasion of Iraq and occupation that, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Even though I volunteered for the military, I didn't volunteer to do what I think is unlawful, which is invade another country that has not attacked the United States. So the war resistors who have extracted a huge penalty, they have been court-martialed and put in jail for their refusal to go along with the Bush administration's invasion of Iraq.
Well, obviously most of us are not in the position to be whistleblowers or even resistors, but I think nonetheless these stories inspire the kind of action and dedication that is required of all of us. Sandy and Pat, feel free to jump in here any time, but I'm sure you, like I, have run into Anne Wright all over the place in the peace and justice world in recent years. Have you not?
We certainly have, and Anne is one of our super heroes. She's awesome, and we so admire her. And I was thinking, I was just going to jump in and say that, yeah, even though those of us who are not in a position to be a whistleblower, just knowing that there are people inside the government who have the same concerns that we do and that are taking action on it, I think that that is incredibly empowering, and it also speaks to how much silencing there is in the media around these people who've taken a stand and around actions like Anna's at every demonstration that we're at and many, many, many more. And there she, I know she's on Capitol Hill as much as she can, being at congressional hearings and really being a witness, and also being able to come out onto a radio show and tell the rest of us what's been going on inside those halls of Congress.
Yeah, absolutely.
As musicians, you know, as well, you know, you mentioned that there are commercial musicians that don't mention these things. They don't mention these things because they lose work over it. There becomes sort of an essential, you know, whitelist that they get relegated to, and certain venues are not available to them. You know, people who speak up certainly pay a certain price, but there's, I think, a far greater price in being silent and in knowing that these kinds of things are going on and allowing them by, you know, and being complicit in these acts by way of our silence.
It's absolutely right, and I have no doubt that you guys could go off and just perform songs about human emotions and personal relationships and get into places you don't when you're talking about our actions that are destroying human lives by the millions. I want to go to a question for Anne from Doug in Louisiana. We've got a lot of questions here in the chat room. What, Anne, do you feel would be an appropriate punishment for Bush and Cheney for getting us into the Iraq War? And do you feel the entire administration, as well as the Congress and the Senate, are also guilty for keeping the war going this long?
Well, yeah, to answer the latter question first, yes, I do think that the Congress has been complicit. They are the ones that voted initially for military operations in Iraq, and of course then they later said, well, but you, the Bush administration, were supposed to come back and get a second authorization for the use of force. The Congress has continued to fund the war through these 5 years in Iraq. I do believe that there are senior officials of the Bush administration, to include the president, the vice president, the former Secretary of Defense, the two secretaries of state, counsel to the president, to the vice president, a whole list of them that have committed unlawful acts while they've been in office, criminal acts, and they should be held responsible for an illegal war, for a war against the peace, for torture, for eavesdropping, for, you know, the list is quite long of what cases should be brought with these charges, and let the evidence be put out into a court, indict them, put them into court, and then let's see what happens, whether they're convicted or not. And I honestly believe that the evidence is there that would put the president and the vice president and these other senior leaders behind bars.
I agree. Let's get the unavoidable question out of the way. We'll take the one from Anna in Pennsylvania. Who are you each voting for president and why? Who wants to go first?
Well, go ahead.
You go first.
Okay. Well, I will probably be, well, I'll tell you the ones that I'm not voting for, and that's for sure John McCain. He does not represent anything that I believe that America should be striving for. I will be voting for Barack Obama, but I will be putting pressure on Barack Obama and his whole administration, should he be elected, to very quickly accomplish some things. The withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq, I would be arguing against him for an increase in the number of people in our military. He wants to put 95,000 more people in the military, and I do not think that is what we ought to be doing right now. I think we should be treating our veterans better. I think we should repeal the No Child Left Behind. We should repeal the Military Commissions Act. I would urge him to close Guantanamo. Within the first 100 days, there is a long list of things that I would want Barack Obama to be doing, and I would be out on the streets to show him some street heat to say, get it done, Buster.
Yeah, most people say, well, I'm going to vote for him, but I'll challenge him. In your case, we know that you actually mean it and can imagine how you'll go about challenging him. Sandy and Pat?
You know, we have, I have had the luxury to some extent of living in states that are not swing states. So I have been able to vote for some third-party candidates and vote, you know, more in the direction of my conscience. And I'm likely to do that this time as well. Here in the state of Maryland, we are fairly solidly Democratic, and you know the state is very likely to go for Obama. So I frankly would like to vote for Cynthia McKinney in this case, and I would urge other people in states that are not swing states to do so as well. But you know the whole election process needs to be reformed. The Electoral College is archaic and outdated. It doesn't work for what this country really looks like now, and we also need to start begin on a local level and continue to put pressure on up to the national level to have institute something like instant runoff voting. I think that's very important.
Yeah, well, I agree. Go ahead, Sandy.
Yeah, you all pretty much covered how I feel about it, too. I am going to be voting for Barack Obama. I do think, obviously, I'm going to keep working to ensure that he really stands for some of the progressive things that he started out standing for. And I do think that I'm hopeful that there is going to be some effect from having someone in the White House who is not white. I think it's a good start. I think that the rest of the world might kind of breathe a slight sigh of relief. It doesn't mean that we can let him just do whatever it is that he's, you know, whatever it is that he might get pushed into doing by the people who have more money or more influence, but we are the ones who need to have more influence, and we do have influence. And we need to continue to have influence.
And the value of voting for independence in places where obviously it doesn't swing the state in one direction or another, is that those independents can then qualify for funding for their campaigns. And it I think gives us all a sense of just how much support there is for something. That's more expanded than just a two-party system.
And you all, and I'm over across the river in Virginia, which is a sweet state, so I have no idea who I'll be voting for because we're voting on electronic voting machines. But you were all three of you out in St. Paul protesting at the Republican National Convention or engaged in some activities around it. Were you in Denver for the Democratic one as well?
Yes, I was in both of them, and being on the streets, and we thought it initially in Denver that was a pretty oppressive with all of the Ninja Turtles that the law enforcement had decorated themselves as until we got to St. Paul, and then we saw what it's like to live in a very scary environment where the police are pretty well running amok, and It was a frightening experience to see virtually all law enforcement in these big padded suits with helmets down. And there was one incident that we were coming off a bridge, having put some banners on a bridge in support of 300 kids that had been tear gassed. All they were trying to do was get across the river to a big concert. And when we came off the bridge, here was an intersection that was locked. The road was closed, so we just took some banners out in the road. And before we knew it, there were about 200 of the Ninja Turtles that had surrounded us on three sides and were forcing us back out of this intersection, closed. I mean, there were no cars in it because the police themselves had closed it. And the confrontation of seven women and two guys and 200 police dressed up like you wouldn't believe was really just, I mean, it almost made you cry. It was so sad to see what had become of the liberal St. Paul area and the fear-mongering that had taken place about people who were really concerned about what the Republicans are going to be doing, where the overreaction of national, federal police putting pressure on state and local police at a cost of $50 million, it just made you sick at your stomach.
It's staggering, and we've got about 1 minute left in the program and some announcements to make, and sadly we didn't all see what happened there because the independent journalists who might have covered it were in some cases detained without charge to prevent them from covering anything, which tells you about the freedoms we are losing in this country. People who want to learn much more about that topic and about what some members of our government and allied governments are doing about it should get this book by Anne Wright, Dissent, Voices of Conscience. Go to voicesofconscience.com. If you want to learn more about Emma's Revolution and hear some more music, go to emmasrevolution.com. If you are in the state of Virginia, I can mention a couple of events because I'm going to be at them. Charlottesville, Virginia on the 22nd of this month and Stanton, Virginia on the 23rd. On the 22nd in Charlottesville, you can catch Anne Wright and Emma's Revolution. Go to charlottesvillepeace.com. www.gorvidal.org to get the details. And the next night, the 23rd, I will be with Anne Wright. Both of us will be speaking in Stanton, Virginia. And you can also find that at charlottesvillepeace.org. Monday, our guest will be Ernie Gallo, who's the president of the USS Liberty Veterans Association. And next Wednesday, my guest will be Elliot Adams, the president of Veterans for Peace. But I want to sincerely thank Sandy Oh and Pat Humphreys and Colonel Anne Wright for being on the People Speak Radio. Thanks to all of you.
Thanks,
thanks
David.
Thanks so much for having us.
For all you do.
Thanks. Thanks many, many times over.
Has anybody seen the choir? I want to preach to the converted.